believe that he was the target of an unfair trial. And I recognize that after the election,
sentiu a pressão da história, vamos dizer assim.
He felt the pressure of history, you could say, with the electoral outcome. But he has a great capacity for regeneration. It's not the first time he is in prison. He was imprisoned as a trade unionist in the 1980s. Late 1970s. He lost his wife to cancer, or he overcame a case of cancer. He was defeated three times before he was elected president. So his history is of strength and of being able to overcome. And I hope he overcomes the situation.
Haddad, former Brazilian presidential candidate of the Workers' Party, who lost to Jair Bolsonaro in a runoff election in October. President Bolsonaro was sworn into office on New Year's Day, declaring liberation from socialism. And that does it for our show. Democracy Now! Has an immediate job opening for a full-time social media manager here in New York. Resumes are being reviewed as received, so apply online today at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Sharina Nadura, Tay Maria Studio, and Libby Rainey. Mike DeFlippo, Miguel Nogueira, our engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley and Julie Crosby. Happy New Year. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, we have KBOO Evening News.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Judge Torres, running January 10th to 19th at the Milagro Theater in Portland. Judge Torres is a modern-day fairy tale rooted in Salvadoran folklore. Xiomara Torres faces many obstacles in her turbulent journey crossing the border, maneuvering the U.S. foster care system, missing her family, aging out, and becoming the most recent Latinx judge in Multnomah County, Oregon. This is her story. Again, that's Judge Torres, running January 10th through 19th, weekly on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Joanne Hardesty is sworn in to City Council.
Washington introduces new gun restrictions.
And in international news, Brazil opens indigenous reserves.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 2nd, 2019. I'm Carly Meisberger.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. U.S. Senator for Oregon Jeff Merkley held a town hall this morning at the East Portland Community Center. Hundreds of people came to the town hall asking about major issues like climate change, health care, U.S. financial support for Israel, and immigration. Here are some excerpts from the town hall.
Everyone's familiar with the housing crisis just by driving down the street and seeing how many individuals are driven to pitch tents and live out of grocery shopping carts. And it's stunning, really, to see how many families are challenged. And we need more federal resources invested in the housing to back up what local communities are doing. And the local community here passed a bond, and well done on that.
It struck me that this person said, we're already spending it. We just need to find out where it's going, that it's not being used. Is that something that is a feasible thing? And a question I want to ask really bad. Are you going to run?
I'm so glad you asked about infrastructure. The phrase "we're already spending it" is not one you would have heard from me. We're spending some money on infrastructure, but nothing close to what we need to spend. I have been on different trips to China where I saw them with bicycles. Then I went back and I saw them with new ring roads and car congestion. I went back again and I saw a bullet train that went 200 miles per hour and new metro systems being built, all with, you know, just short period of time, while we're basically barely maintaining the infrastructure that we have. Now, there was a plan that was put forward, a group of us put it forward, for a $1 trillion investment in American infrastructure on top of what we were doing, and that did not gain traction in the leadership last year. Trump did put forward an infrastructure plan eventually. It was kind of a back of an envelope plan, but it was complete absurdity. It said instead of putting 80% federal funds into a project with 20% local, the feds would put in 20% and the local would put in 80%. Well, I can tell you any infrastructure project that we have 80% of the funds for, we would go ahead with it already, maybe a slightly smaller version of it. And in addition, he said we're going to put $200 billion in to this special infrastructure project, but he took $240 billion out of other infrastructure projects, so it was a net decrease. So we have to have a serious $1 trillion plan, and it should be bipartisan. This should be something that absolutely everybody could get behind, a $1 trillion plan for infrastructure, for everything from roads and bridges and docks and jetties to things such as transmission lines and rural broadband. We should have rural broadband in every single small town across this country.
You've talked about a lot of issues where Mitch McConnell or President Trump are blocking efforts to make progress on. Do you see any issue in the next 2 years with the Democratic House and a Republican Senate and President Trump where we could make progress?
Absolutely. I think the most prominent is infrastructure. But I'll also tell you that when I talked about the high cost of drugs, that is an issue the president has highlighted. Am I optimistic that the House and Senate will take it on mildly if the president is actually determined to pursue it? The bill I referred to that I put forward is referred to as a reference pricing bill because it says you can't charge more than you charge in these other major developed countries. The president actually gave a speech a couple months ago where he called for reference pricing for Medicare. Well, that would be a big improvement because we are paid twice as much for drugs in Medicare than we pay for in the Veterans Administration, which negotiates the price. But I'm just arguing that what's good for people 65 and up would be good for all of America. So I hope to expand on the president's suggestion. But those would be two areas. I think there'll be unexpected areas, just like criminal justice was an unexpected area. We came together just recently.
And we're here outside of the town hall being organized by Senator Jeff Merkley with Rod Such. What is your message to Senator Merkley today?
We're here to tell Senator Merkley that we thank him for his opposition to the Israel Anti-Boycott Act, but we also want to ask him to speak out forcefully against the Israel response to the Great March of Return in Gaza. More than 220 Palestinians have been killed by IDF forces, and more than 10,000 have been wounded. The IDF is using sniper scopes made by a local Oregon manufacturer, Leupold and Stevens, based in Beaverton. And we have alerted the company that they must practice due diligence and make sure that their products are not used in human rights violations. And they have ignored us. So we are coming to Senator Merkley with a message to ask him to speak out against the practice of supplying the IDF with weapons and weapon accessories when they are committing war crimes in Gaza.
Well, has this been brought up to the Senate as a violation of the Arms Export Control Act? As it seems like it would be a violation.
It certainly would be, and it's actually, because that legislation has already been passed, it's actually the obligation of the State Department to enforce it. And the State Department never looks into human rights violations by Israel, unfortunately.
Has Senator Merkley, I know he has taken a strong stand against the border wall, has he made that connection that the border wall is being constructed by a company that is also building the wall in Palestine?
I would certainly hope he would start to make that connection. It's a logical connection to make and an important one, because it's the same type of colonialism going on. If I get a chance to ask him a question, I'm going to ask Senator Merkley to speak out forcefully against Israel's war crimes in Gaza, and to ask that he speak out also for Israel to lift the siege of Gaza, where there's a horrible humanitarian crisis taking place.
And what about U.S. Monetary, financial, and military support for Israel?
The United States government should sanction Israel because of its human rights violations and should cut off all aid as a result.
All right. Well, thanks very much. Again, I've been speaking with Rod Such outside of Senator Merkley's town hall.
My name is Debbie Schwartz, and I'm with Healthcare for All Oregon. I am the chair of the National Strategy Committee of HCAO Action, which means that I'm focused on national bills like Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All, S-1804. And Senator Merkley has been a longtime supporter of single payer and signed on to Medicare for All. And I'm here today to thank him for that and to talk about other ways we may be able to work together so that Healthcare for All Oregon can support Senator Merkley in these efforts.
What are some of the impacts of maintaining our privatized healthcare system on people who need healthcare?
Well, privatized healthcare systems skim 20% off the top. They basically make money by denying people healthcare and causing suffering and, in some cases, death. They also make an enormous, they make it much more expensive for providers to provide care because they have to hire so many people to fight with the insurance agencies. Medicare has a 1-2% overhead, so it's very efficient, which is why Medicare for All would be so so efficient and provide such better care to so many people. Right now, we are in a situation where plenty of people have deductibles that are so high that they can't afford to use their health care plan. So they are paying premiums or co-premiums for their health insurance and then actually still not going to the doctor until things become so severe that they become much more expensive and much more traumatic for the person involved.
And in order to pass Medicare for All in the current legislative session, Republicans would have to cross over. Is it pretty much along party lines? Are there Republicans who are willing to say, hey, this is at least costing too much, even if they're not compassionate for the people being affected?
There will be.
All right. Well, thanks very much. It's been Debbie Schwartz with Healthcare for All Oregon, the website hcao.org. This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
Nature Note is a series of weekly 2-minute pieces that describe something happening in the natural world in north central Vermont at the time each piece is produced. The snowshoe hare's giant back feet give the animal its name. If you track the hare in the snow, you'll find prints from the back paws ahead of the front paws. That's because of the special way it moves. Find out more on today's Nature Report.
This is Nature Note with Angela Gibbons of Earthwalk Vermont.
Today I'm feeling thankful for the snowshoe hare. With a little fresh snow, hares are well camouflaged in their winter white coats. And with a thin layer of crust beneath the snow, the 3 or 4 pound hares can easily move about on top. When snowshoe hares move on the snow surface, we can follow their distinctive tracks. Large hind feet give them the snowshoe name. Following a hare's trail, you will notice a hare's hind tracks are mostly in front of their front tracks. This is because their front feet land first. Then, their larger hind feet continue past where their front feet have landed. As I follow the trail of a snowshoe hare, I look for stories the tracks tell. I can read where a hare is moving along at what I call a happy gait, their baseline. However, along that same trail, I can also find up to a 10-foot gap between sets of tracks, with red fox tracks close behind. The hare's oversized feet and strong hind legs can help propel them up to 27 miles per hour. Some other signs of hares to look for include browsing. Small branches and twigs appear to be neatly clipped at a 45-degree angle. During most of the winter, hares also gnaw on the stems of woody plants, such as blackberry canes and other brambles. Also look for the small, light brown, woody round pellets, or hare scat, along the trail. Next time you head out into the forest, look for those well-worn snowshoe hare stories in the snow.
Nature Note comes to you weekly from earthwalkvermont.org and Goddard College Community Radio.
Will sales of semi-automatic weapons go up in Oregon this year? They might, as beginning yesterday, it became illegal in Washington for anyone under 21 to purchase such a weapon. Other parts of Initiative 1639, including stronger background checks for people buying assault rifles and requiring the safe storage of all guns, will take effect July 1st. In Oregon, House Bill 4145 closes the so-called boyfriend loophole, expanding the existing gun ban for convicted domestic abusers to cover an abuser even if they aren't married to or living with the victim or they don't have children together.
With Elizabeth Warren announcing her candidacy for president last week, other Democrats are inching closer to announcing what political insiders already know. With articles about his potential candidacy in Rolling Stone and The Atlantic, Washington Governor Jay Inslee is nearing the spotlight and wants to be known as the climate candidate. Like Warren, Inslee supports the Green New Deal, a program being pushed by Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Bernie Sanders, and other progressives in Congress and the Senate. Having lost his bid to have Oregon rules changed so he could run for both president and senator in 2020, Jeff Merkley is waiting to announce which way he'll go.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal leaders were among those to take part in inaugural events in New Mexico Tuesday for Michelle Lujan Grisham. The Democrat who left her seat in Congress for the role of governor laid out her agenda in a speech in Santa Fe, highlighting economic development, renewable energy, and early childhood education. Tribal leaders say they look forward to working on a number of issues with the new administration. Lujan Grisham served 3 terms in Congress and worked on tribal issues, including health care, protecting sacred items, and protecting native languages. She was sworn in shortly after midnight before taking part in the day's public events.
congressional leaders are headed to the White House Wednesday for a briefing with President Trump on border security as the partial government shutdown enters day 12. Tribal leaders and leaders of Native organizations are concerned about long-term impacts to Indian country, including in areas of health care and public safety. And there's worry about the protection of Native women. The Violence Against Women Act, which has key provisions for tribes, expired last month. Democrats take over the House on Thursday. Democratic leaders have said they plan to fund the government and end the shutdown. First Nations leaders in Canada will continue to work on a number of issues in 2019. Last year, the country's top First Nations leader, Perry Bellegarde, was re-elected as national chief of Canada's largest Native organization, the Assembly of First Nations. He pledged to better health care and education and work on land resource issues. Bellegarde is now serving his second three-year term as national chief. In 2018, First Nations in British Columbia received an apology from Prime Minister Justin Trudeau for the killing of six chiefs more than 150 years ago. Trudeau told them that colonial government officials made a mistake when they invited chiefs for peacekeeping talks, arrested them, tried them, and then executed them as criminals. Trudeau said the chiefs have now been fully exonerated without any wrongdoing. Also in the province last year, a statue of the country's first prime minister was removed in Victoria as a gesture from the city for the reconciliation with Indigenous groups. The Sir John A. Macdonald statue was taken down from City Hall. He was an architect of the country's residential school system. To mark the legacy of residential schools across Canada, the government announced last year the creation of a new holiday. It's working with Indigenous groups for an annual day to acknowledge what's now seen as a time of cultural genocide. Native children were taken from their homes and forced to attend the government-funded and church-run residential schools where thousands were physically, sexually, and emotionally abused. The national holiday is intended to raise public understanding about the history of the schools. Priorities in the new year among First Nations will continue to include pipelines and missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. Hearings with Indigenous groups on the Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion were held in November and December. Indigenous leaders have expressed concerns about land and water. Some First Nations support the project for jobs and economic development. The Canadian government purchased Trans Mountain and its expansion project, but a court struck down its approval, citing inadequate Indigenous consultation and environmental concerns. And in 2019, a final report and its recommendations are expected to be submitted to the Canadian government on missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. Commissioners working on a national investigation heard testimony from individuals and organizations in 15 communities. In October, they asked for two more years but were given 6 months. Advocates and leaders say they have not seen much action from the government on recommendations made in the interim report. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for news from the Boo. At 6, it's Kitchen Table Conversation. Then at 7, we're keeping it real. Tonight's weather is a low of 40 with a 60% chance of rain. Tomorrow's weather will be rainy with increasing wind and a high of 51. Today in history, in 1999, a severe winter storm hit the Midwestern U.S. with 19 inches of snow falling in Chicago and 68 deaths in the region attributed to the storm. The quote of the day is from writer Isaac Asimov. Born 99 years ago today. The true delight is in the finding out rather than in the knowing.
Current Cast is a daily 60-second module that discusses water sustainability and stewardship. Topics covered include pollution, conservation, climate change, recreation, and more. Learn more right now on CurrentCast.
Restoring Great Lakes wetlands on this CurrentCast. Lakeshore marshes and meadows create wildlife habitat and provide benefits to people, too.
Filtering your water, absorbing high water during flooding events, providing more fish and wildlife experiences for people.
Jim Howe directs the Nature Conservancy of Central and Western New York. He says maintaining these ecosystems requires occasional fluctuations in water level. High water keeps woody plants from encroaching on meadow, and low water allows seeds in the lake bed to germinate. For decades, water levels on Lake Ontario have been tightly controlled. But now a new plan will allow lake water to rise and fall more naturally, replenishing 64,000 acres of wetland. Current Cast is produced in partnership with Cornell University's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
The House rules for the upcoming Democratic Majority Congress will include a pay-go rule favored by conservatives. Under the pay-as-you-go provision, long supported by Nancy Pelosi, any new spending must be offset with either budget cuts or tax increases. Critics argue that pay-go creates an unlevel playing field, where Republicans get to blow giant holes in the tax code, as they did in their 2017 tax cuts, while Democrats must mind the deficit. The new rules would make major changes like Medicare for All and the Green New Deal nearly impossible to pass, said Waleen Shahid, communications director for Justice Democrats, quote, "There's enormous appetite in the Democratic Party and among all Americans for major public investment to tackle our nation's major crises, including deepening inequality and structural racism and climate disaster."
Joanne Hardesty was sworn in January 2nd to Portland City Commission, Position 3. She is the first Black woman of color, and the only third Black American to ever serve on Portland City Council. The city council is now officially majority women.
Netflix censors an episode of Patriot Act, critical of Saudi Crown Prince MBS, and the Forward journalist Josh Nathan Kaziz exposes mainstream Jewish institutional support for cyberbullying pro-Palestinian college students. All of this and more now on the Middle East Minute.
I'm Esti Chandler for the Middle East Minute Plus. Netflix has been accused of caving into pressure from Saudi Arabia by removing an episode of Patriot Act with Hassan Minhaj, which is critical of the kingdom's handling of the murder of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Netflix pulled the episode, which disparages Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, known as MBS, and the Saudi-led military campaign in Yemen, from airing in the Saudi kingdom. The decision by Netflix renews concerns about government control over freedom of expression on online platforms and has once again illuminated Saudi Arabia's ongoing assault on free speech and human rights activists. Netflix has defended its decision, stressing it was in response to a valid legal request from the Kingdom's Communications and Information Technology Commission, to which it acceded in order to comply with local law. And the Forward's investigation into mainstream Jewish institutional support for organizations and activities targeting students who support Palestinian rights continues, with Josh Nathan Kaziz's article on Monday titled, "When Jewish Leaders Decide to Harass College Kids to Support Israel." His investigation reveals, among many other disturbing finds, that the anonymous cyberbullying group SJP Uncovered, SJP referring to the over 200 chapters strong on-campus organization Students for Justice in Palestine, is in fact a secret project of the Israel on Campus Coalition, a Washington, D.C.-based pro-Israel organization tied to many mainstream funders and organizations in the Jewish community and founded as a wing of Hillel International. This has been the Middle East Minute Plus, a joint project of KPFK and Jewish Voice for Peace.
KBOO News poet Dr. Dan Raphael has a diagnosis for the new year.
How can one man hold millions hostage and suffer no consequences? It's great to be president when big money likes how things are going and controls everything we see, hear, and consume. A system where one man can be so toxic and have so much power is neither democratic, sane, or healthy for this planet. I know Trump's just a bright pussy sore on a greedy, diseased economic system. We spend so much time scratching, trying to cover the damage, arguing about what pills to take, what side effects we can tolerate. We need new prescriptions, not the old placebos of Pelosi, Clinton, or Biden. More than socialized medicine, cures for society's ills, a natural, unprocessed diet with plenty of local exercise and the clean air and water of ample resources and hope. November of 2020 is too late for a cure. I know a lot more must change than who lives in the White House, but I want a new president long before this year's over. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
Getting to work just hours after being sworn in, new Brazilian president Jair Bolsonaro transferred the regulation and creation of new indigenous reserves to the Agriculture Ministry, which is controlled by the agribusiness lobby. Previously, the indigenous reserves, which make up 13% of Brazil's territory but are home to less than half of 1% of the population, was controlled by the indigenous agency, FUNAI. Bolsonaro spoke of his intention to integrate indigenous tribes into general society. During his campaign, Bolsonaro promised to reduce the power of environmental agencies and free up mining and commercial farming on indigenous reserves. Last year, deforestation in Brazil was the worst in a decade, rising almost 14% over the previous year.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 2nd, 2019. Here are the main points again. Joanne Hardesty is sworn into City Council. Washington bolsters its gun restrictions. And in international news, Brazil opens indigenous reserves. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael and Jenka Soderberg. The producer is Rachel Hartley, and our engineer is David Kesters. The director of Evening News and Public Affairs